going to talk a little bit today about what is the purpose of education. And if you ask that question of 20 people, you're going to get 25 different responses. I know, because I've done it. So take a second and answer the question. Why do you send your kids to school? What is the purpose of education?
The Family Freedom Podcast, voices of family and freedom. Now here's your host, Wendy Hart.
Many years ago, I overheard a conversation between a father and his soon to graduate from high school daughter. And he was kind of asking her, you know, quizzing her a little bit on what she'd learned in those 12, 13 years of public education. And he asked her, "So who was president during the Civil War?" And she kind of struggled and then ultimately said, "Abraham Lincoln?" But she said it with a question. And, you know, the father was, he's like, "Yeah," but you could tell he was a little bit disappointed that it wasn't just, "Yeah, Abraham Lincoln," and that, you know, she could spout off all this information. I bring this up because there are people these days, especially in the age of Google and smartphones, that say there's absolutely no reason that we should be teaching our kids anything that they can Google. And so that brings me to our topic for today. What is the purpose of education? And is your belief about why you send your kids to school the same as mine or your neighbor's? There are a lot of different reasons, and everybody has, based on their experience, a reason why. So it's always, we educate children too. And what is the answer to that too? Sometimes the idea is that, well, you know, these days it's college and career ready, that everything that we're doing in education really should lead to college or a career or both. And so some of the other things that kids study, maybe they're superfluous. Should we really be teaching them Shakespeare? If I am not going to be an actor, should I be studying drama? Why should we allow kids to take, you know, should we be pushing kids to take calculus if they're not going to become, you know, engineers and need to build bridges? All of these things enter into that conversation. And the corollary to that conversation with the purpose of education is, who gets to decide? Who decides what is going to be taught to your kid? And I bring this up because once upon a time, you and your neighbor and the lady across the street and the people in the next block, those were the people who determined what was actually taught. And you would work with the teacher, and the teacher obviously would have some ideas. And I'm old enough that when I was going to school, there were just these general things that were established. You know, you learned the times tables in third grade, and you learned U.S. history in fifth grade. We didn't have formal standards per se like everybody does now, but that's just the way that it was. Everybody knew that by third grade you should be learning your times tables. But the parents were much more involved. There were textbooks, and so there would usually be some sort of textbook committee, and parents would get together and they'd say, "This is the textbook we like for fifth grade or whatever for math, and this one for history." And then the teachers would tend to teach that. The teachers obviously were involved, and the principal and everybody else, but it was very much a local decision. And at some point, that kind of changed, and there are some good reasons why. The biggest was that, you know, we want to make sure that everybody has this baseline minimum of education. And that's kind of the concept of public education, that if you are responsible for educating your kids, you may not have the resources. So we're going to pool our resources together. We're going to build a public school. We're going to send our kids to school, and they're going to learn, because everybody needs to learn how to read. Everybody needs to learn how to write, and everybody needs to learn how to do 2 + 2 = 4 and 3 × 3 = 9. And so this is where you get the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic from our past. The problem was that then as we progressed through, there were higher and higher levels of people that came on and decided that this is what everybody needs to know. And some of those people were motivated by you know, their organizations that maybe they were textbook publishers, or they were think tanks, or they were corporations, or they were philanthropists. Most recently, you've got Bill Gates, who put an awful lot of time and money and effort into promoting the Common Core. I'm not going to go into the specifics of that later, but I'm sure we'll touch on it as we go through. But Bill Gates has an awful lot of money, and he pushes this set of standards throughout the nation to where you end up with 36 states that adopt it in 1 year. And a lot of incentives and reasons why. But the question is, why should Bill Gates' opinion about what your child should learn and the people that he was able to facilitate, why should that be more important than what you and your community wanted your kids to learn? And maybe they're not different. But why does he get to buy education is kind of the question. So let's go back. I've heard many people, when they talk about education and public education in America, they always bring up Thomas Jefferson. And Jefferson was renowned for promoting the idea that you can use taxpayer dollars to help fund education so that people who don't have the means have the ability to educate their kids. And he did push that forward. He was mostly talking about buildings. That if you go back and look at it, he's talking about the physical building, but then everybody else was going to you know, hire the teacher and determine what was going to be taught. He has this quote. It's from a letter to a man by the name of Joseph Cabell, and it was written in 1816, I believe. And he said, "But if it is believed that these elementary schools will be better managed by the governor and council," and he goes on and lists a bunch of governmental agencies, and he says, "So better managed by the government than by the parents within each ward," and we would say district, "it is a belief against all experience." A belief against all experience. I mean, it doesn't work in real life. That's what he's saying. You cannot have government manage the education of your children and have it work out well in real life. And he says, "Try the principle one step further and amend the bill," he's talking about legislation, "so as to commit to the governor and council the management of all our farms, our mills, and merchant stores." And he's saying, again, that when you have government controlling all of these things, it's not going to turn out well. And that education is no different than your private business and your own personal things that touch on your life, managing your life. You don't turn that over to the government. And that's why he's saying the parents need to be involved. Because at the end of the day, whose kids are they? They're your kids. And you need to be involved because you're the one who has the most vested interest in what it is that they're learning and how that's going to impact them for the rest of their lives. Now, it's important to understand that there's currently a vacuum in education where the parents used to be, and we could get into the reasons why, but the idea is that the more that we have standardized and more that we have enforced education from top down instead of bottom up from the parents and local communities, the more we've pushed parents out. And having served on a school board and talking with other people who have served on a school board, one of the things we joke about is buses and boundaries. If you want to get people riled up, you change the bus, you change the boundaries of the school where your kids are going, and you will have parents showing up in droves. But change how math is done, that's going to be more of a trickle. I mean, parents do eventually get upset and frustrated if they don't like the math. Or if there's some major change, they'll show up. But usually it's just push through, try to get the kid, you know, work with the teacher, not realizing that there's a much bigger principle behind this, that this is coming from somewhere. And I spoke with a veteran teacher, and he made the comment that once upon a time, before we had all the standardized testing and everything else, teachers used to exercise what they called a closed door veto. And that means that whatever came down from on high, the teacher, especially teachers that had plenty of experience, they would shut the door and they would teach what they knew was going to work and what the parents wanted. And that's the question. Should the teacher be teaching what the state mandates? And we legally, they have to, if it's different from what the parent wants for their kid. So these are questions, these are discussions, and we need to be having these discussions. Some of the other issues that are present in education right now is how much technology. Should kids really be involved on the computer all the time? Is it only 20 minutes a day? Is it 3 classes a day out of 4? How much technology do you want your kid involved on the computer? And should you, as a parent, be able to say, you know what? I think my kid doesn't need tech until they're in 8th grade. A lot of the Silicon Valley executives, Google and so forth, they send their kids to high-priced private schools where they don't have any technology until like 8th or 9th grade. Why is that? So that's a question. Some people want the basics. You know, we want to know that Abraham Lincoln was the president during the Civil War and why that was impactful, and the Emancipation Proclamation, and just have that, you know, right there at the tip of your fingers, or literally in your brain, so that you don't have to go to Google to find out. A lot of the push these days is on workforce. Should we be educating kids at all on anything that doesn't lead directly to their career? Recently had a conversation with a friend about, should we be pushing kids to calculus? It used to be that calculus in high school as a senior was kind of that everybody was on track to get to calculus. Most people didn't take it, but we prepared you in order to be able to get to calculus. Should that still be the case? A lot of people say no. A lot of people aren't using calculus. And then there's the argument we don't need times tables because we have calculators. These are all these questions that need to be asked. And it goes back to who decides. Should Bill Gates, should your state board of education, should your teacher, should you be involved? Do you want your kids to learn the times tables? Do you want them to be able to have the chance at calculus? Should they know Abraham Lincoln? In my opinion, there are two different versions of education. And one is the top-down version, dictated to you, and you as a parent dutifully send your kid off, make sure that you complain if the bus doesn't show up on time. But other than that, just turn it over and hope that the people in the think tanks and the philanthropists do have the best interests of your kid in mind, and they'll get through it. The other is bottom-up, where you are involved and you know what your kids are learning and you're interfacing with your kid's teacher, because by and large, our teachers, they're great, wonderful people. And a lot of them have their hands tied by these top-down dictates, and a lot of them feel like this is just what they have to do. So how do we help our teachers and work with them to teach what we want to have done? I want to give you a couple of contrasts. The first one is from a man by the name of John Goodlad. And he said this, I believe, in the late 60s, 1969 is what I'm remembering. And think about if this is one of the options, that this is what you want for your kids when you send them to school. The quote, "The most controversial issues of the 21st century will pertain to the ends and means of modifying human behavior and who shall determine them." There it is again. Who decides? "The first educational question will not be, what knowledge is of the most worth? But what kinds of human beings do we wish to produce? The possibilities virtually defy our imagination." So he's talking about, you know, once upon a time, reading, writing, arithmetic, he says that needs to go. 21st century, and here we are. So this is, you know, almost 50 years later. Well, it is 50 years later. 50 years later, he's saying, it's not about the knowledge. It's not about the actual facts that we're going to be educating kids. It's going to be more about the social skills. And that's not to say that none of that goes on in school. It absolutely does. But that the primary focus is going to be modifying behavior of children. So we send our children into school, and rather than learning how to read, write, and do arithmetic, we're going to educate them to be correct. We're going to educate them to have the right kind of personality, that they're going to be collaborative and communicative and participate in class and a lot of teamwork and things like that. And again, I'm not saying that any of that is bad. It's a question of priorities and where should we spend our time and resources, and should it be the same for everybody? These are the questions we need to ask. So I want to contrast Goodlad with Michelangelo. Michelangelo, I love this quote. So as I read this, think about one of his sculptures, like the Pietà is probably one of those most moving sculptures of Mary holding Christ after he's crucified, and how you can get that depth of feeling from stone. It just amazes me. It's probably my most favorite sculpture. But the grandeur of the David, you know, Michelangelo is brilliant. So this is what he says. In every block of marble, I see a statue as plain as though it stood before me, shaped and perfect in attitude and action. I have only to hew away the rough walls that imprison the lovely apparition to reveal it to other eyes as mine see it. The reason I quote that is because that's how I view education. Education, in my view, and the specifics of it we can talk more about, is that every human being is there. The potentiality is there. And if you think of it in terms of the sculpture, it's encased in the block of marble. Every child, when they're born, they have so much potential. And as they keep growing and experiencing life, they start to take more of a form. But that potential has always been there. And we're not trying to mold them and change them into something that they never were and never were intended to be. The idea is that we're freeing them. And the more we give them as far as information and experience, the more we free them to become fully themselves. And that is the purpose of education. Whether they, you know, get this job or that job, and whether they use technology or they don't, or they know who Abraham Lincoln is, the end goal of education is education for itself, to improve the individual, that the individual takes that experience and it is beneficial all on its own. Whether they get the high-paying job or they don't, the fact that they know and understand Hamlet, that elevates them. That who they are as a human being is better than who they were before they had this information and this knowledge. One woman said that the idea of education is to show and express to children the beauty and the understanding of the world in which we live. And I think too often we're focused on, you know, all that's bad in the world and we need to change it. And I think we sometimes put too much on kids. They're young, they're immature. And we're saying, look, here's the world and look at all these things that are broken and you're the hope of the future and please fix it. As opposed to the idea of, look at the sky, look at the clouds. Isn't this wonderful? Have you ever wondered how this works? And even, you know, I'm a math geek, right? Even the patterns and the beauty of the Pythagorean theorem and of the unit circle and even the times tables. Look at the nines sometime. Look at the patterns in the nine, you know, 1 × 9, 2 × 9. There's a pattern there. Look at it. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. That's the purpose of education, is for the individual to be sovereign. And in our society, in America, the individual is ultimately sovereign. And so we educate our kids so that they can be the best version of themselves. And we need to do that with facts, but we also need to do it in a way that is very specific to what we as our local communities want. public education is what the people want. And the bigger that group gets, the more infighting there's going to be, the more problems you're going to run into. And that's why the corporations have come in. They say, hey, you know, we'll take care of it. We'll tell you what you need to know. Well, they have an agenda. They have a bottom line, and it may not be what you want for your kid. So the question is, how do you get involved? And everybody's overwhelmed. We got so much going on. But it doesn't take that much time to be paying attention and to get involved and opening the lines of communication. And in this podcast, I'm going to bring up some ideas. I don't claim to know everything, but I do have some understanding and experience that I wish, you know, I'd had 20 years ago. And I want to share that and help you understand how to get more out of the education for your kids, regardless of the method that you use to educate your kids. But we are going to focus more specifically on public education, but I think it expands across whether you're homeschooling or private schooling as well. The first and most fundamental thing is to open up the lines of communication with the people who are the decision makers. We have local school boards who are supposed to represent you. They are the ones who are supposed to oversee how education is being run at your local school. They're supposed to make things easy and facilitate that process for your kids' teachers and for the principal. So you need to know who your school board member is, and they need to hear from you because they're nice people and they're probably extremely intelligent, but they can't know everything. They can't know your experience. They can't know your child like you can. So open those lines of communication. They will learn from you and they need to learn from you. They can't represent you if they don't know you. Be involved. If there's like a school community council, get involved. And parent-teacher conferences are great, but they're like, what, twice a year? Get to know your kids' teachers. Have those conversations with them. If there are things that you're worried about when you see things come up, have those conversations with the teachers. Again, wonderful, brilliant people, but you know your child. They see your kid in a certain context, and they're focusing on what they see. They need the benefit of your experience as well, and you need the benefit of theirs. It needs to be a partnership. And then discuss in your circle of friends. Ask about your friend's kid's education. Find out where there are commonalities. And talk to your kids. Don't just say, what'd you do in school today? Ask them things like, what was the most interesting thing? And, you know, what did you read? You know, the specifics. What did you play at recess? Find out what it is they are learning. And don't just show up at school board meeting if they move your bus schedule or they change the boundaries. Education, remember, is that drawing forth from within who your child is. As you educate them, will become better if we give them the tools, if we give them the knowledge and the information that they need to see the goodness and the beauty in the people around them and the world around them. That's the purpose of education.
This has been the Family Freedom Podcast with Wendy Hart. Follow this podcast, share with your friends and neighbors, and add to the Voices of Family and Freedom.